listening to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, PBSHLP, on Vashon Island. And I'm Linda Nygaard, sitting here in the studio. I'm a little hesitant right now. I'm not sure we're on. I think we're on air. Okay.
Yep, looks all like right. It.
Here we are. Hi. I'm sorry. I'm all alone at the board.
It's basically it's a clown car.
Hi, everybody. I'm Linda Nygaard, and you're listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon, 101.9 KVSHLP. And I'm sitting here in the studio with Tom Conway.
Hola.
Hello, Tom.
How's it going?
Good. I'm good today. And our special guest, Emily Woo-hoo. Scott, who's the executive director of the Vashon Mori Food Bank. Hi, Emily.
Hello, Linda. And
I'm
Tom.
Really
Thanks
glad you're here.
Me.
I'm yeah. so glad you're here.
Likewise.
You know, we have a lot to talk about today. And I think rather than run through the summary of what we're going to talk about, let's just get to it.
All right. And okay. Linda's already given me the signal for cut it, Tom.
Not yet.
You know that thing across the throat?
You'll get it in a
when
minute.
When you see that.
You'll get it in a minute.
I'm getting it now.
So what's going on with you, Mr. Tom?
Oh, let's see. You know, I've made a couple of different things this week. One of them was I wanted to make a friend of mine's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a baker, but she likes chocolate. And so I made a Lisbon tort. In fact, it's sitting in my refrigerator right now. I'm going to drop it off after the show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's a chocolate. It's like a brownie cake kind of thing
yeah.
with a chocolate ganache layered on top of a chocolate mousse and then powdered chocolate on top. It's a lot of chocolate.
It sounds really good.
Yeah.
It sounds really good. I made a chocolate snack cake the other day. It's called a wacky cake. It's a recipe from the Depression, and it has no eggs in it, and it has no butter in it, and it is so good.
Really?
Yeah, and you just mix it in one bowl and pour it in the pan and bake it. It's really good. Not as good as that Lisbon tort, but, you know, for a snack cake, it's pretty nice.
No.
Yeah. And you want to talk about biscuits?
Oh, that's right. You know, we're going right to biscuits because...
Who wouldn't want to talk about biscuits?
Exactly.
That was a good segue, wasn't it?
It was. Okay, enough of that. Let's go to biscuits. Linda and I, our last show, we were talking about biscuits, I think, it was in the mix. And so I said, well, I'll make, she said she couldn't make very good biscuits. And I said, oh, it's easy as pie. And so I went to her house on Sunday, last Sunday, and made biscuits. And The real story here is I was the winner because she made sausage gravy to put on the biscuits.
Wow.
So
what kismet.
Exactly.
It was, yeah, it was good. Jennifer Hawk was there too, cheering us on and taking photographs. It was fun.
I'm a big fan. Biscuit, you know, it's funny. My coworker, Duncan Goulding, who might be listening right
uh-huh.
now.
Hi, Duncan.
He's our
operations That's a great name.
Manager, isn't it?
It is a wonderful name.
He's actually a radio personality in and of itself. He wouldn't like if I said that. So sorry, Duncan.
take it back.
Yeah. Oh, she didn't say
he
anything.
He was just talking about biscuits and gravy at work the other day and about how he really, you know, appreciates a good one. So
is
I
he
think
from
it's
the South?
Universal. No.
Oh, you know, I had to call my friends from Arkansas because I probably made sausage gravy 30 years ago. Really?
Yeah.
And I called my friend Margie from Arkansas.
You did her proud.
And she told me exactly how to do it. And one of the secrets is obviously, you fry the sausage, but you fry bacon separately.
Oh.
And then you don't put the bacon in the sausage or anything, but you make your roux from the bacon grease. And I've been taught that you never, ever should mix the bacon grease with the sausage grease. Ever.
You know.
So, I like it.
It was good.
It's funny because it brings back a memory of, I used to have this whole shtick. Oh, and let me share it with you now, where about bacon grease.
Yeah.
We know when Paul Prudhomme was popular. And
doing
had
everything
his own,
blackened.
Everything blackened fish, this and that. And also with everything with bacon grease. And I used to do this little, my impersonation was Paul Prudhomme on the cooking channel going, well, first of all, you put some of this bacon grease and then you put in the flour. Then after the flour is brown, you put in some more bacon grease and then just baste it in some other bacon grease. And then you roll it in bacon grease and then you put some salt on it and it's perfect.
It's perfect.
How could you go wrong?
Exactly.
You know, speaking of Paul Prudhomme, I met his sister in Lafayette.
In Louisiana?
Uh-huh. Her name is Enola Prudhomme. And I spent a couple days in her kitchen with her. And she is really down on her brother's style of cooking because she has the opposite problem that he does. She was a little tiny, itty bitty, skinny woman who could not gain weight.
Oh, wow.
And so she wanted to teach him how to eat more healthily. Mm. So she wrote a cookbook of low fat Cajun cooking.
Entitled Wake Up, Paul.
No, called Low Fat Cajun Cooking.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Paul sort of eschewed it a little bit.
No
you
doubt.
Know, I tried some things out of it, but, you know, low fat alligator tips.
Yeah.
Was kind of funny. But anyway, well, that's a good story.
Yeah.
We fixed biscuits for breakfast.
We did.
Ended up in New Orleans.
You know, it is like the lumberjack breakfast is a real thing because I did not eat for the rest of the day.
I didn't either. I was so full.
I was so full. And
it
then it was
disgusting.
Like 5 and I go, oh, good, I don't have to cook dinner.
Yeah.
I know. I know. It really was.
Lots of water before bed.
Right.
Exactly. Some watercress.
Yeah. Well, another exciting food tidbit I have is that I had a banh mi from Sugar Shack last week. Mm-hmm. Have you had one yet?
No, but do tell people who are not familiar with a banh mi what it is.
Well, a banh mi is a Vietnamese sandwich, and it can be made with chicken or pork or tofu, and it has a secret sauce on it. I'm not sure what it is. It might be here. It might be like a sriracha mayo, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But authentically, it also has the pickled julienned vegetables, which are just so good. And it has jalapenos and cilantro.
And great French bread.
And it's on a really good, it's really crusty on the outside French bread and soft and chewy on the inside.
Yeah.
It's delicious. And I
had a banh mi in San Francisco right outside of City Hall probably 5 years ago when a friend of mine was working there, and it cost like $2.50.
Oh, I know.
That's probably the best sandwich I've ever had.
I still remember my first banh mi.
Yeah.
I love it 5 years ago, and you're still. It was that good.
It was that good.
Oh,
yeah.
And it was so cheap.
Yeah, I like that.
Painfully.
I feel that way about Cuban sandwiches.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I know.
Man. We should make some
in
of those.
Miami.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's going on? Tom, you have a collection of calendar events.
Oh,
what's going on in Vashon?
Yeah,
you
know, we like to sort of go over what's going on, and I thought what I would do is. What is that thing about teaching people to fish? There's a really great resource, and it's Vashon Events. And a lot of people think Vashon Events is just Vashon Events. It's about, you know, things you'd attend to that were entertainment. But I feel like Vashon Events is the best site Vashon has to offer about what to do, where to do it, and not necessarily with whom to do it.
Well, and it's not just music and theater.
No, not at all. In fact, what's really great, like if you go to vashonevents.com, vashonevents.org, you scroll down, this is what's so great about it, is they have different sections. So the first part is the entertainment, the things that are going on in theater and music and things like that you'd expect. If you scroll down further, they also have a musical instrument library. They have a Vashon Calling album, a compilation of album of Vashon musicians. But here's the juicy part for our foodie people is food and beverage guide. And they have different, they have four sections: takeout and delivery, restaurant and dining options, farm stands and food delivery, and wine, beer, and cider tasting. And if you click on those, it has a thorough synopsis of each business and time and hours, location, what they specialize in.
That's great.
It's a jewel, information.
What are they telling us this week?
Well, this week they're saying there's pretty much everyone's kind of locked into the winter schedule.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Somebody said yesterday January was really a long year.
Oh,
it's
man. True.
Isn't it? Do you feel that way too?
Oh yeah. I had a series of unfortunate events at the start of the year, including like a car accident.
Oh geez.
Some just a whole bunch of stuff. I kind of just feel like my head came out of the sand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're January. What? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when people say, what have you been doing? I almost have to like, I need to have like a template of things I can just say that sound more interesting than what I'm actually doing.
All of a sudden you're immediately talking about like really your personal life. Like, oh, that's not what you meant.
Oh, you didn't mean that.
You meant like,
well, you know, that's really
level.
True nowadays, especially I think, you know, when you... How are you? Is a loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a loaded question.
I'm a wreck. Like, okay, I'm a wreck.
How much time do you
I'm so lonesome, and I'm really mad. My cat is sick, and my hip hurts, and you know,
I can't go out to. I don't go out to eat.
And so now we just say, "Oh, I'm great. How are you?"
Yeah.
Turn it around.
A friend of mine. A friend of mine likens it to the. Do you remember Private Benjamin, that movie?
Oh, I loved
where she's
it.
In the army.
Too funny.
She said basically, COVID's like being in the army. She wants to go out to lunch. She wants to wear sandals. She wants her friends to call her Judy.
The funniest, I thought the funniest line in that movie, this is not food related at all, was when she looked at the sergeant, that big drill sergeant woman, and said, excuse me, I think I'm in the wrong army. It was pretty funny. Anyway, back to food.
Yeah.
Let's talk about seasonal food. Anything going on in seasonal food?
You know, this would be good because it'd be interesting to talk to what's at the food bank.
Yeah, like what's going on at the food bank from local?
Well, that's a great question. We're actually just in the process. So for the last handful of years, we've had funding come from different kind of county or state sources where we can buy locally grown food. In the past, when we did that, it was just if we allocated some in our budget. And as you both know, often for a variety of reasons that maybe we don't need to get into here, but locally grown food retail value is higher than if you get it from like Charlie's or from a wholesaler.
Sure.
So that's been a challenge in the past, but now because we have outside funding that's directly for that, we're talking with like Matsuda Farm right now and with Vega, of course, about how we can glean produce from farms to go directly to the food bank and then use some of those dollars that we've got to purchase directly. So,
helping the food bank and the farmer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
which is great. It's almost like the food bank, of course, our primary goal is to aggregate and distribute food, not necessarily to grow it. We do have our own garden because it's a great volunteer engagement tool.
Right.
And it's like the freshest food that people can see growing right there.
It's beautiful food.
Yeah. So throughout the winter, though, we have been spending about over 100% increase annually for the past handful of years on produce purchasing. So even in the winter, when it's not coming from the island, we get from Charlie's or other wholesalers, sometimes local grocery stores, just because the pandemic really highlighted people's kind of year-round need for reliable and, highly nutritious food.
Right.
So our budget has reflected the kind of demand for that kind of stuff.
Well, right now,
how great is that?
Lots of the root vegetable things. Mm-hmm. And Tom, you were talking about the carrots at Plum Forest.
A friend of mine brought, God bless these friends. I had a friend who's, she was dropping by and she said, "Oh, I can't eat all these carrots. I got some." And I'm thinking, well, carrots last for like 3 months, but I was not complaining. She goes, "Well, I thought I'd bring you some." And she brought them from Plum Forest. And shout out to Plum Forest. I tell you what, I don't know what those are, like magic bean carrots.
And they're giant.
But they were so, like, usually this time of year I'm used to a winter carrot being kind of like a tough old thing that you have to
kind
cook to death.
Kind of woody. In the ground for 5 months or something.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But these were like, they were almost juicy. Like they were juicy crunch. Like in an Asian pear apple has a juicy crunch.
Mm-hmm.
It was like these carrots had a juicy crunch. They were so good.
I love that.
I know.
Not that none of this is about me, really, but just for, personal anecdote.
Oh, you can, if it's like us, you can make it all about you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, the next 4 minutes are all about Emily. So sit back. Speaking of Plum Forest, and local farming, I moved, I was in the Peace Corps from 2009 to 2011. And
right.
I moved to Vashon to work at Pacific Crest Farm.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Bob
where you were an intern?
Jen Keller. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I love those guys. And Rob. We all the kind of interns know each other working at various farms.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob from Plum Forest, we realized after talking for, briefly one time back, I think it was in the 80s, he was doing, I don't think it was with the Peace Corps, but he was doing some overseas work in Senegal where I was in the Peace Corps. And we both lived in the same city called Chess. That's about 100 kilometers inland from Dakar. He lived there for a couple years, as did I, like 3 blocks away from each other. We knew some of the same people, like city, like government officials and stuff. It was like, what is this Vashon vortex, that you end up, it's like halfway across the country. But what an example of how local food brings people together.
It really does. And
it really does. Yeah,
And Linda, not that I don't want to say that we're slouches, but you know, when we're sitting next to Emily, it's like, okay, she's like 12 and she's been to the Peace Corps. She's been in the Peace Corps. She was a farm intern and now she manages our food bank, like one of the most impressive food banks I've ever come across.
Yeah.
So, and what did I do? I bought toilet paper last week.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, you made a cake.
I made a cake. There you go.
You taught me how to roll pizza dough. Also,
oh, that is true.
Yeah,
that's a skill. Life skill.
Yeah. And there was a time when I was on the Vega board, when Tom was on the Vega board, and I had just gotten started there. And I was voluntold that I was going to be updating the website. And Tom had been doing it. So in an effort to pass it off to me, I'd go over to his house and eat, you know, whatever delicious pastry he had and like fresh lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I don't think I'm really ever going to really pick up this website update thing. But we can do this.
Yeah, this part's good.
Yeah. Like, this is great.
Yeah, I know.
And then at Karen Biondo's Pizza Truck, I started to work with her over the summers while I was in grad school and before. And I, at one point, kind of took over Tom's role as the pizza dough person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, grandpa's back would hurt because I had to lean over and roll dough.
Oh, it was
And after
hard.
You do like 100 pizzas, your back is throws out a little
I
bit.
I was doing that for Karen as well, and I'm way too tall to fit in that little short thing, you know? But, man, that pizza's good.
I know.
It's really good.
I know.
I just have a little kale story because about seasonal food. I was thinking about seasonal food, and I'm a big root vegetable fan. I mean, I could eat them all year long, really. Mm-hmm. And kale and I have a complicated relationship. I used to love kale. I ate it so much that I got sick of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to decide that I like it again. And I found something that makes it really delicious, and that is a recipe for a casserole that has lots of bacon and cheese in it. it's very good. I haven't made it, but I read the recipe and I know it's good. So I think I'm going to have some kale for dinner.
That's it. I like that. The Holy Trinity, bacon, cheese and kale.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I thought that was quite a combination.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of healthy.
No. Oh,
right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so. I think there's three major food groups there.
Mm-hmm.
Fat and...
More fat. Yeah.
Food
you
and
know,
soul food,
it, like
you know?
Julia Child and her thing about just add more butter.
That's right.
She also said, well, if you have an aversion to butter, just use cream. She had an answer for everything. You know, on our food calendar, since there's really not much going on right now in the produce department, let's talk about Black History Month. Since it is a food related situation that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, do you know who Edna Lewis is? Have you heard of Edna Lewis?
You know, I don't, but I feel like I should.
No, should doesn't matter.
I think that what's so ironic is that I knew about her because there was a white chef who was friends with her, and mm-hmm. then he had a couple cookbooks, and through him, that's how I learned about her. But she's really the star of the show.
Well, she really is. Edna Lewis is a famous chef from... Well, she wasn't really a chef. She called herself a cook.
Yeah.
And she was born in Virginia, Freetown, Virginia, in 1916. Mm-hmm. And her grandfather was a slave. Mm-hmm. And she knew him. Her great-grandfather, I'm sorry. And she knew him. And so he told her stories. And he taught her a lot about cooking and how they used to cook in the olden days and what it was like to cook as a slave. Mm-hmm. And she learned a lot of stories and she learned a lot of cooking techniques. And then when she was 16, she married a merchant marine. And they moved to New York City, and she stayed married to him for the rest of her life. He helped her. He was also a cook. He was a cook in the Merchant Marines. So they did their thing together, and in New York City, she wasn't really cooking. She was a seamstress, and she was a seamstress for high society women like the Vanderbilts and the people mm-hmm. in New York who ran the place, you know, and she was a cook herself at home, and she decided, well, since she's not cooking for a living, she will throw lavish parties. So she threw a lot of lavish, really good dinner parties. And through that, people came to know her as one of the most astounding cooks and entertaining personalities that mm-hmm. they ever knew. So through that, she opened a restaurant and she's lived several places. I can't detail all of it,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is people helping people. Mm-hmm. And in 1962, so she's in her 50s, right? Yeah. She broke her leg. She had a little restaurant and she broke her leg, and it was a bedridden kind of broken leg. She couldn't get out of bed. So Julia Child sent her friend and editor over, Judith Jones, who helped her write her cookbook, her first cookbook, sent her over to Edna Lewis's house so that they could plan Edna's first book. And so they did. They wrote Edna's first book.
How old was she at this time? In their 50s?
She must have been her 50s because she was born in 16.
She's a really, she's an elegant looking woman.
She's very elegant looking woman.
Yeah.
And in, so anyway, her first cookbook was sort of, it wasn't really well received. It was okay.
Yeah.
Her second book is called The Taste of Country Living. And in that, the New York Times said it may be the most entertaining regional cookbook in the history of the world. And it,
what's the title again? I got to write it down.
The Taste of Country Cooking.
Oh, cool.
And in there, she chronicles her, her upbringing, her rural upbringing. And she writes about things like storing hand churned butter in the cool water that ran beneath the spring house, you know, and she picking wild watercress. She talks about that, wood burning stove cooking and all the things that she had to do in her life. And her thing was, you know, the women that she grew up with and that taught her, her mother died when she was very young. So she had a lot of aunties,
mm-hmm.
and they taught her a lot more history and lessons and that sort of thing. But what they thought of themselves as was people who could cook. They had to cook three meals a day. There was no choice in doing that. So they had to learn, but they turned it into art. And it was, you know, for them, it was an essential craft. They had to eat, they had to cook to eat, but it became a prized art for them. And the next thing I'll tell you about her, there are many books written about her. She's got some books out. There's tons of information about her. She was a wonderful woman, but she's often been portrayed as sort of this slow talking Southern woman, you know, and gentle, kind, soft. And her, let me see, was it her niece or her, their niece said, "Oh, Aunt Edna wasn't like that at all. She had no Southern accent whatsoever, moved about 90 miles an hour, and talked really fast." So, you know, some writers missed the boat on her. But in honor of Black History Month and women in general and cooking, mm-hmm. I just think if anybody's interested in food writing at all, Edna Lewis is a do not miss.
That's a great tip. It really is.
Thank you.
And what's funny is I think she's become more famous in the last couple when she was in her 60s and 70s, and I think she lived to be, she recently, I think, passed
like
away.
2008?
Yeah, I think so.
Something. Well, that's another point. You know, people knew her, but she wasn't famous. She mm-hmm. wasn't celebrity. She didn't have that. And you're right, she's gotten it now since her death.
You know, it reminds me of, we were talking about a pastry chef for the Highlands, which is one of mm-hmm. Birmingham, Alabama's best restaurants.
Right.
And the pastry cook is Dolister. Her name is Dolister. What's her name?
It starts with an H.
Oh, Dolister Miles.
Oh, it starts
and she
with
likes
an H.
To be, yeah, and she likes to be called she likes to be called Dole. But she's been working there 30 years.
Wow.
And she basically now is she's kind of a little. She's not a little. She's a celebrity,
mm-hmm.
and all her friends and family are kind of going like, really? Why? You know,
why?
And she goes, because she just makes cakes.
Yeah.
But she won the James Beard Award as a pastry chef.
Yeah.
And she has some really remarkable recipes. But it is that thing, like, I think when something's so good and it's so ingrained in a society
mm-hmm.
that sometimes it gets forgotten because you do take it for granted. And mm-hmm. and what's so great about the article I read about her in the New York Times is that She's as surprised as everyone, but when you hear her life and her story and what she's done and what she makes and how she makes it, and the people she involves in the community and mm-hmm. the people who own her restaurants who just, you know, revere her dearly and really, they're all part of a family, so to speak. It's great to see that it's finally coming to the surface. But what's funny, one of my favorite parts of the article was when they're talking to the family, you know, mm-hmm. and friends and nieces and aunts and uncles, yeah. they're going like, well, I'm going to have to go into that restaurant because I want to see what a $12 piece of cake tastes like.
Because he gives one on Sunday.
Exactly,
anyway.
Because they've been her family's been eating this all their lives,
funny.
But they want to taste what the $12 cake is in the restaurant, you know.
Great. You know, talking about how people forget mm-hmm. about who cooked what and how mm-hmm. it went and the history of cooking. As Edna Lewis got older, writing became more important to her, and she felt like she wanted to record stories for future generations. And I have a quote that she said shortly before she died. The world has changed. We are now faced with picking up the pieces and trying to put them into shape, document them so that the present day young generation can see what Southern food was really like.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great.
Oh, I just love it.
You
yeah.
That to, so speaking of Black History Month and kind of food systems broadly, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we talk about this kind of stuff up at the food bank all the time.
I bet you do.
And my coworker Stacy and I were just yesterday talking about, you know, the history of Black land ownership in the United mm-hmm. States, and you know, talking about reminding current generations about history and not only like how to make food, but where it has come from historically.
Right.
I'm not going to try to spout off any stats or anything because there's lots of other people who are better at that than I am. But you know, there's the whole history of, you know, slavery and then, you know, abolition, people being offered like mm-hmm. 30 acres and a mule or whatever for every
right.
man. And these days there's been systematic and really, you know, institutional racism that has stripped,
yep.
You know, Black folks across the country from land ownership mm-hmm. and then left them in various forms of poverty because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's some efforts right now being made to undo some of that, but really, you know, it's obviously still a problem, but there's a lot of places that have some really, and again, about reading and just kind of educating mm-hmm. yourself. There's a newsletter and it's a website. I guess they call themselves a newsletter, but called Civil Eats. Do either of you guys follow that?
I don't know.
It's really good.
Writing that down too.
Yeah, just right now. I just looked on there. You know, the top article is Can Farmers Help Each Other Navigate Mental Health Crises?
Oh, wow.
McDonald's Food Justice and the Problem with Black Capitalism. About heirloom tomato varieties, you know, kind of like civil rights in the cattle industry. And then, you know, relevant to Black History Month about how mm-hmm. Black farmers are rebuilding agriculture in coal country in the Southeast.
I read something about
yeah.
that. Yeah.
So I would recommend looking into that. There's
yeah.
a lot of really meaty
that's
stuff
great.
In it. Really
the other thing stuff. I think that I love to, I tell this story frequently. So if you've heard it, I'm sorry. But one of the things that really inspired me about the slave trade was that the women sowed seeds in their clothing when they left
oh, right.
Africa. And so that's how we got things like okra and peanuts.
And the Carolina gold rice.
And the Carolina
basically
gold rice.
Basically a cash crop.
Thing. Yeah. And we have a lot to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
For their ingenuity. I can't imagine how they thought yeah. to do that
mm-hmm.
and then did it and created a life.
Taking things for granted that we don't even know we're taking
know.
For granted. Right?
I know.
Yeah.
There was a, there's an interesting, there are two shows that I think are really interesting about African-American food and origins of mm-hmm. American food based in African cuisine. And there is one is High on the Hog. It's on Netflix.
Oh, I love yeah. High on
and
the
they,
Hog.
And they and he goes back to Africa.
Satterwhite.
What's that?
Michael Satterwhite?
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah. And that's a really good show to watch because you get a whole new understanding of like what we wouldn't have. Half of the stuff we love to eat and American food, as we call it, isn't really truly American.
It's not.
Food.
Well, nothing is really true.
And nothing
yeah.
is right,
or that we experience.
There is no America.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's another show called Somewhere South. And Grandpa can't remember
his. Did you forget?
I forgot her name. I'll think of it. Vivian.
Mm-hmm.
Vivian.
Yeah.
And,
oh, I know her.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a PBS show, but she has a show called Somewhere South, and she goes through and she bases it on a food. Like one episode is porridge, and she talks about porridge in every sort of cross-cultural aspect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And then she'll talk. So it'll be like, some will be grit porridge, some will be oats. But basically, each show discusses the ethnic aspect of that mm-hmm. food. And there's one episode she talks about porridge and she has a bunch of Black chefs, a bunch mm-hmm. of African-American cooks and chefs. And she has a sort of in this wonderful restaurant that's in the Tule's of Alabama.
Tule's.
And
yeah.
But what's sort of interesting about it is you can tell like that the people she's brought together to talk about it are just so over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're going like, you know, this is basically they're saying, this is our cuisine. This is what we had. And you act like it's new, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting, I actually appreciated the show because it was an honest sort of look about how sometimes you know, oh, we all jump on a bandwagon that, mm-hmm. you know,
the newest and the greatest.
Yeah. And, the, and culturally, forever. Like the people yeah. who have been doing this forever look right. at it like, going, oh, go, here we go again.
Here we go again.
Like culinary cultural appropriation.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. that was
that's
what
true.
I was,
yeah.
that's exactly yeah. what it is. And
I
that's,
just, I just did a little, and so this is a white woman, right? And mm-hmm. I can imagine going
right.
down there.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Oh, this is so great. And they're like, lady, get out of here.
Get out of here.
Exactly. The irony is she was raised in a really wealthy North Carolina family. And she wants to talk about, you know, origins of black mm-hmm. food, and
right.
they're just looking at, and then she had the luxury of going to New York and being a chef, and
yeah.
and I, but I do give her credit because she they didn't edit very much. You could tell that she was uncomfortable.
There
they
were some
uncomfortable.
I know this show yeah. now that you're talking about yeah. it. Yeah, there's some sort of little awkward moments.
There was awkward moments.
Yeah, Emily, a minute ago yeah. you said something about McDonald's, and it reminded me of a story I just read that. In 2012, there's a man in Iceland whose name is Smaursson, and he was cleaning out his garage, you know, and he found his rollerblades and his boxes of tools and all kinds of, you know, nasty stuff in a box, and an untouched bag of food from McDonald's.
Oh, wow.
And it was still in the paper bag, and it had been sitting there for 3 years. He remembers because he purchased it one last McDonald's meal before McDonald's left the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got that meal, and I guess, I don't know why he didn't eat it. It doesn't say that. But anyway, the bag was in immaculate condition. No mice ate it, and there were mice eating, you know, the leather belts and stuff. They wouldn't eat the McDonald's. And... you know,
it's that special sauce.
It might be the special sauce, but they had it at a some hotel. They displayed it in a hotel in Iceland, and I guess Iceland got tired of it, and it is now on display in a hostel, a youth hostel in Ireland.
Did they have it bronzed?
Right next to the 1962 Twinkie.
Oh my yeah. Lord.
I wonder if he chose to abandon his McDonald's first or his rollerblades first.
I
you
wonder.
Know, was it a cultural thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
In Hungary, I don't know.
That's pretty funny.
I thought that was...
he was going to eat the McDonald's after he went on a sweet rollerblade ride and then...
Well, that's what people usually do.
With Levi. And with his Levi cutoffs
oh,
on.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like fun.
Ooh, and a tank top.
And a headband.
Sarantine. Y'all sure? Let's talk about the food bank.
Sure.
Yay.
I'd love to talk about the food bank.
It's one of my favorite topics. And not just because I get paid to talk about it. I would talk about it.
Well, you have a passion for it.
I do.
And that it's a natural passion. I first met Emily when I volunteered at the food bank.
Mm-hmm.
Back when God was a boy, and you know, I worked there for a while and did that. And I was up there the other day,
yeah,
to talk with you and to mm-hmm. be at the other radio studio, which is up by the food bank
up on Sunrise Ridge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I stopped in there, and I, you know, the changes that you've made are just incredible. How long have you been back?
Oh, well, let's see. I always have to do that math. I started as, right when I left Pacific Crest Farm, I started there as the volunteer program manager, and
mm-hmm.
I think it was March 2013, and then left to go to grad school.
Right.
September 2017.
Okay.
And I came back as executive director in, what, June of 2019, I think.
Of 19. Okay. Like, so, yeah, it's been a little over 2 years.
Yeah, over 2 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because, oh, what a 2 years it's been.
Well, what do you see as the biggest change that's come your way? I mean, I know that's a big question, but there have been incremental little changes along the way.
You know what? I expect people think I'm going to say COVID, and I'm just going to buck the trend. I'm not even
going to
say it.
Oh, good. Okay.
I know I just said it, but just pretend I didn't.
No.
Okay.
I think it is that because of some external factors that I just said I wouldn't mention,
mm-hmm.
We've seen such generous support from our community
and
from the community at large. That we've been able to focus, you know, expanded resources to really, you know, not get a bunch of flashy things.
Mm-hmm.
And, although we did get a brand new tent outside. That's like the nicest thing we've ever had.
It's really you can stay dry.
We made jokes about like, we should rent this out. People can get married.
It could be a little chapel.
That's a good idea.
So nice. It was last year because, you know, for a variety of reasons.
Right.
Our facilities are kind of, you know, need improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But we, let's see, so because of the generosity of the community, we've been able to make some really structural organizational, like internal changes.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, we've got our first ever operations manager, who's Duncan Goulding, who started as our home delivery coordinator.
Okay.
We just also last year brought on Stacey Karkonen, who's our first ever development and communications manager. So, you know, that's the first position we've ever had who's focused on fundraising and like community relations aside from the executive director. Mm-hmm. So I feel like 10 years, if you would have asked me if I was really excited, like, if you, Emily, do you get really hot to trot about middle management? I'd be like, no. But ask me that now it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, well, when it's working.
Yeah.
When it's working, it's a good thing.
And the team up there is really great, you know, and everybody's got the passion and the kind of drive to, we're just making kind of constant systems improvements. And we've had no shortage of opportunity to do so.
You know,
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So Emily, I have a friend of mine who I think I can mention her name, Kasana. She works. She volunteers.
I love Kasana.
So, but which brings it'll bring this will actually bring me to a question. I promise. when I'm talking to her and she's volunteers up at the food bank and she'll say something, and I go, "That food bank does that?" And she'll go, "Yeah." And I go, "Oh my god!" And then she'll be talking about something else, and I go, "Wait, the food bank does that?" And she goes, "Yes." And then she'll say something else, and I go, "Like, no. They don't do that." She goes, "Yes, they do that." And so I think because of that, my protracted intro here to this is if nobody knows anything about the food bank,
right.
Could you sort of give us a general idea of what the food bank is, how people can benefit from it, who can go there, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So let's see. I'll start with an even longer intro. And
excellent.
Give a little retrospective. For years and years, the Vashon Food Bank, you know, has always done really great and important work in the community. But for a long time was what we call like a traditional food bank model where, you know, donations come in, get sorted, and then are put in kind of like, you know, usually like milk crates of stuff on counters around the room. And then folks kind of file in, whether they have a shopping cart or a grocery bag, and would go around the room just selecting, you know, certain numbers of items based on their household size. In 2018, so what, about a year and a half pre-pandemic, we shifted to, like many food banks in the region, shifted to like a grocery store. Like, I think of it more like a bodega, you know, like, because we're not Thriftway, you know, but it was like a little corner store. So people would come in with their shopping carts and stuff was set up more like on shelves. So it had less of like a government distribution feel and more of like, I walk in here, I take what I want, and then I leave. When the pandemic started, we pretty immediately over the course of 1 week, and this was a wild week, shifted from that kind of bodega model to, you know, not allowing customers to come in anymore just because our space is limited. It's really small. But we managed to maintain the priorities of offering people of quantity and quality and variety of food that was really specified to their needs. So we switched from the grocery store model to now where, and this has evolved, you know, over the last couple of years, but now people can show up at the food bank, grab a shopping list that has, oh my gosh, I wish I knew how many items. It's updated on a weekly basis based on our inventory and has hundreds of items, some of which remain kind of fixed because they're government commodities that we will never, ever run out of. And some of them are really exciting. Like we just happen. Go ahead.
Excuse me. When you say government commodities, you're not talking about those nasty old blocks of cheese and powdered milk.
They don't really have those anymore.
No.
That was like a different economic model. But we do get a bunch of food from this program called the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which is federally funded. And we get food. There is, and this is a funny, nerdy grammar anecdote, there's a state program called Emergency Food Assistance Program because they didn't put the T in the acronym because you're not supposed to put a the in an acronym. Like any English teacher anywhere. I feel like among my criticisms of the federal government is that they included the T in there.
Okay.
But we only get money from EFAP. But so that's like where our government food comes from is through this government program. And because of some very complicated, you know, geopolitics related to trade with China for the last handful of years, the food we get through TFAP is like inundating. We have too much of it. So we have to, on a weekly basis, say like, we don't want any more pork and juices, please. You know, because we've got two shipping containers full of all that kind of stuff. I know.
Yeah.
But so back to how people can use the food bank. anybody who wants to, regardless of income level, because we, you know, are really dug into the notion that food is a basic human right, and mm-hmm. you could use help with grocery bills regardless mm-hmm. of your income, right? So anybody who wants to can come in, just fill out a simple intake form, fill out a grocery shopping list.
And yeah. it's not based on income at all.
There are two boxes on the form that have income numbers on them, mm-hmm. but they're just because those government programs require us to have right. the information there, but we will never turn anybody away based on
that's impressive. It's amazingly impressive.
Yeah, and you know, I'm happy to say this. Even like the federal program, mm-hmm. they used to require, you know, a signature or have people like attest to the fact that I don't make. And even during COVID, they loosened up those requirements mm-hmm. too. So it's unfortunate, but also good, I guess, that something as dramatic and with such wide effect as like COVID had to happen before mm-hmm. the federal government would loosen up some of their red mm-hmm. tape, which is ridiculous,
well,
but also.
But
good.
Did the numbers go up of recipients after during COVID?
During COVID, they did. Yeah. Let's see. So I think pre-COVID, on average, our weekly service numbers were between 200 and 225 households per mm-hmm. week. Maximum, I think in June maybe of 2020, we did around 280 services total. Wow. Maybe it was even 290. But the really shocking number was that over the course of about a month in the beginning of 2020, our home deliveries, which we've had a home delivery program for years, mm-hmm. and it used to be about 30 households per week.
Mm-hmm.
Peak 2020, it was up to, I'm going to get this wrong, I think it jumped up to like 175 households.
Wow.
So we had an over 500, pushing 600% increase of that program, which is why, thanks to, you know, funding from the community, we hired our first ever staff person who was focused mm-hmm. specifically on home delivery.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would take a lot of organization.
That's amazingly remarkable. Yeah. That's so remarkable.
Isn't it?
It's a lot.
I'm just sort of gushing because I know you. I'm serious. I mean, it's talk about, you know, I think one of my own little quirky philosophies on Vashon is, mm-hmm. you know, Vashon, we have an opportunity to make the world kind of the way we want it because we're an island.
True.
And I think that, you know, I can't work on the rest of the country, but I can work on where I live.
My community.
My little microcosm
mm-hmm.
here.
My little community.
And places
yeah.
like the food bank, it really does sort of give you chills that there are so many willing and wonderful people mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and smart people that know how to get the distribution the delivery and make it all work.
Yeah.
So I would give credit to, you know, all of our staff, like the logistics that happened to coordinate mm-hmm. all this stuff is just wildly different than it used to be 5 years mm-hmm. ago. Our volunteers are just stunning with their resilience and their, you know, people who came out of the woodwork to volunteer during the peak of COVID before there were vaccines and stuff. People just kind of showed up, mm-hmm. Which I think in 2020, we brought on over 200 new volunteers over the course of the year.
Wow.
But also huge, you know, shout out to all of our customers who are mm-hmm. the most resilient in our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about folks who, unfortunately, there is sometimes still a stigma, you know, connected to being resourceful, which is so funny because that's like of the, you know, Protestant work ethic we're all supposed to grow up with. Being resourceful
right.
is like
right.
a good thing. Yeah. Unless you're living in a capitalist society where you want something like food, right? And then when you're resourceful, some people will look down on you.
A little judgment really goes
silly.
On, yeah.
So I feel like our customers get the most, you know, most kudos for riding this kind of crazy COVID wave.
And just the idea of delivery, like if you were somebody that was, you were uncomfortable, you weren't sure how to, you know, you needed the help, but you didn't mm-hmm. want to ask for it. What a great way to be able to receive something mm-hmm. that you're in need of without, you know.
And there's no stigma at all.
And no
you know?
Stigma at all, yeah.
And I think, surprisingly, you know, people during COVID and subsequently have lost jobs. Maybe they lost an income.
Mm-hmm.
So the mortgage is okay. They can pay the mortgage. I can pay the electricity. But mm-hmm. when it comes to the end of the month, there's not enough left for food.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the clients come from, too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about, 290 families, you mm-hmm. figure, I mean, this is sort of like my bad math, but even if you say there's 4 to 5 people per family,
right.
you know, that's, we're teetering on a 10% of the island requiring food assistance.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something for us all to sort of pause and mm-hmm. think about if you're listening, mm-hmm. that we don't know. Everybody has a story. We don't know it. And, you know, we want to,
you know, cost of living on this island is not going down.
No, it
soon,
isn't.
You know,
Yeah.
And when, of course, like how the housing crisis is in the news regionally and locally, and that's, you know, talk about basic needs. I was just in a Vashon Social Service Network meeting this morning, and that's, you know, everybody there is working on basic needs. And they're, because we don't have a, you know, municipal government who would be like an umbrella for, you know, to kind of coordinate all those services. There's a bunch of nonprofits doing all the work, and, you know, we're all doing our best to not work in silos and to collaborate
right.
and to make sure we're not creating redundant programming. But it's a real challenge, you know, because it, you know, running a nonprofit is running a small business, and it takes a lot of time and effort, you know.
A lot of calculations, yeah. That's for sure.
So do you have a certain amount you can spend each month, or is it an
on
annual
food?
On food?
That's a great question, right? Oh, gosh, I should have brought our budget with me. I know, let's see, we're spending, like I said, way more than we have in the past, and I believe in 2020, our overall food purchasing budget is... should know this. It's somewhere. It's around 70 or 80,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you do you accept donations from people?
Yes.
And how do you go about doing that?
That is a great question. So, it's a great to check in with the food bank, and we actually just acknowledged that we should have on our website a live and updated like what kind of food we need right now. So stay tuned. That'll be coming.
Okay, that's great.
But in the meantime, you know, because we serve such a large number of people on a weekly basis, and we do it through this order, and so bags are packed by volunteers and then, you know, run out to the parking lot, or for home delivery, they're packed by volunteers and then through a pretty complicated logistics system sent to people's homes. So it's great if we have something in enough quantity that we can put on our menu. So if
like
at least 50 units of one thing. And then people can kind of choose from it. Right now, when we receive, you know, kind of random donations from people's pantries, although for anyone who's listening, if you have anything that's older than, you know, depending on the product, like 2 to 5 years old, just kindly, lovingly give it a Viking funeral. And don't dump it in the pews.
No, don't dump it in town.
Don't let it on the fire. I'll let it on fire. Set it off on a boat. But
my chickens just got pumpkin pie. So I mean, pumpkin pie filling. Yeah.
It's a good thing to do.
So, as far as donating to the food bank, if you want to donate food, if it's perishable, you can come check in. If it's non-perishable, a wonderful young Eagle Scout named George Murphy just built us a new donation shed.
Oh,
this
wow.
adorable blue shed.
Oh.
Yeah, so you can drop it off up there anytime. It'll be run into our warehouse. And if it's perishable, we ask that you call the office or, you know, just check in up there so a staff member can make sure it goes where it needs to go so that it doesn't, you know, sit out.
Is there anything in particular at this point that you need? Are there, do you have needs right now?
You know, I think we've got ongoing needs, but a lot of them are tied to like global supply chain issues.
Yes,
like,
I wanted to talk about that too.
Yeah. So we just got a bunch of eggs today. So we'll have eggs for people this week. But the last few weeks, we haven't had any eggs on hand. I go over up to the city often these days to hang out with my partner, and we have both noticed that Safeway's in the city maybe 3 times over the last month, they've not had any eggs either. So it's like we can use the money folks donate to us and ask the community to kind of help fill the gaps, but ultimately we're all part of the same global network as everybody else, right? So really what is the most useful for us when it comes to just being able to be adaptive and fill in the gaps are financial contributions.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Would you prefer money or?
You know, it sounds so I've got a really goofy relationship with money, but in this case, it allows us the flexibility and the reliability to have that, you know, that budget.
Yeah.
To be able to adapt on the fly. And then we can either do like group, like bulk purchasing with other. So we're a member of the South King County Food Coalition, which is a bunch of, you know, true to name, a bunch of food banks in the South King County. We could do bulk purchasing with that group. Or, you know, we've got accounts with like Sysco and Costco and just have kind of lines on other wholesalers to get things at a better price point than we might otherwise.
Yeah.
So cash, you know, money goes a long way.
Well, and just so people know, that you can go to vashonfoodbank.org.
Yes.
/donate. Mm-hmm. So that's easy. Vashonfoodbank.org.
Vashon Mori Food Bank, isn't it?
Nope.
Oh, is it just Vashon?
Well, the URL for the website is Vashon Food Bank.
Oh, good.
Okay. .org. But we still love Mori. /donate. So.
Well, that I guess I'm confused because isn't it Vashon Mori Food
so
Bank?
So our technical legal check, name, like, the state's website, our name is the Vashon Mori Community Food Bank.
Okay.
We often shorten it to Vashon Food Bank,
right,
because it rolls off the tongue easier.
Yeah.
And I heard, I was just in a community council meeting, you mm-hmm. know, the newly revamped community council,
mm-hmm.
where they were talking about this very issue and suggested, you know, maybe, like, all respect to the people, to the folks, good folks who live on Maury Island, but everybody's mailing address has Vashon on it.
That's true.
Know?
That's
so
true.
If we're talking about, like, town or community, you
it's
know,
it's Vashon.
It's not specific latitude.
No.
Yeah. It's
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway.
Can we talk about your volunteers a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you recruit them? Where do they come from? Who are they? What do you need? Tell me all about them.
I would say right now they're kind of everybody and from all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, we have high school kids who volunteer after school to pack grocery bags on Wednesday evenings. You know, lots of, you know, retired folks who still have plenty of time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no shortage of folks who are like, I thought I was just going to kick back and relax during retirement. And then they realize that they're just not that kind of person,
mm-hmm.
you know,
because mm-hmm.
like they tried to watch TV for half an hour and got really bored. And so luckily we've got no shortage of things to do. And, you know, as far as recruitment, the last couple of years have been kind of amazing in that we have not had to do that much recruitment. We've got people just kind of, our volunteer program manager, Leslie, just today, I, you know, walked in the next room and she was interviewing a volunteer who just, you know, called or emailed out mm-hmm. of nowhere and said, hey, what are you guys looking for?
Can I help?
Which is wonderful. And I think our ongoing needs, you know, there's volunteers are so wonderful because there's so many of them and mm-hmm. it's just this outpouring of kind of community goodness, you know, and at the same time, scheduling can be a challenge.
Sure.
Like Leslie's got her work cut out for her for sure. So having, you know, more volunteers than we need for on call, like grocery bag packing and driving for home delivery are mm-hmm. two really mission critical areas that we rely pretty much entirely on volunteers
yeah.
for. So mm-hmm. having like a cachet of on call volunteers for those jobs is really useful.
That's good.
Then there's also things like, unloading our trucks on Tuesday and when the garden's up and running in the summer, helping out in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like this year we're going to be working more closely with Vega to do some gleaning, like I was mentioning.
That'll
for
be
farms.
Great. That'll
and
be
we
really
can use
great.
Volunteer
yeah.
help there. We have some volunteers who show up just to double bag paper grocery bags. And it seems so mundane, but it's like one of the most important.
But it has to be done.
Yeah,
it has to be done.
Do you need any paper bags from people?
Thank you for asking, Tom.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
always need paper bags.
Awesome.
We would love if, and so the people in the warehouse, and this is tip of the hat to them that I'm remembering to mention, we'd like them to be clean with handles intact. And if you can double bag them yourself and kind of stack them
mm-hmm.
up,
mm-hmm.
you just saved us, you know, hours
yeah,
of volunteer labor.
Some time.
Yeah. And when, you know, when we don't have donated paper bags, we purchase them usually from Thriftway or from Costco.
Yeah.
So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's one of those resources.
I'll
that,
save
so you
them.
Do save
I'll
money.
I'll save them.
We
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have another subject I'd like to ask you about. Do
yeah.
you tell me what's in store for the future? And can we talk about the sale of the property and how
yeah.
you might be doing some other things
how
in the future,
that,
how
yeah.
all that's unfolding.
Oh, absolutely. So, and so what you're referring
just
to
just a little
right,
background
is the,
for people.
Yeah,
yeah.
definitely. So, amongst other kind of exciting and wild things that happened in 2020,
mm-hmm.
You know, we were just talking about all the kind of massive program adaptations we made. We were also approached by a fellow who bought the dig, the property formerly known as Dig
right.
the Nursery, from Sylvia and
Ross.
Yes. The former owners for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
So the fellow who bought it in between had some, you know, plans that fell through, and he decided that the best use of that property would be to give it to a, you know, a community nonprofit
mm-hmm.
who would use it for, you know, the good of the community. So he approached us, I think with the thought that we would move there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after doing kind of an assessment, it's, you know, it's commercially zoned right now. And there's that beautiful old farmhouse on it.
Right.
And our board, I think pretty wisely, you know, decided that it would serve the food bank's mission and the community at large better if we sold it and put that money in capital reserves
mm-hmm.
to find a location in the future that's really well suited to our needs. And I think that worked out. We ended up netting over $700,000. That's now in capital reserves from the sale of that property. And the folks who have moved in there have all kinds of really wonderful plans. I've lost track really specifically of what it is, but you've probably seen they've had community
they've had
events,
little events
and music.
And things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that they've got plans for the future also that
they're community minded.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. So I feel like that worked out.
Current plans to move.
Well, so there, I'm going to be a really slippery politician here about this. We are definitely, in talks with finding a location closer to town.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I'm just going to leave everybody hanging about the details.
But negotiations means there are other people talking.
And it means something's happening.
Yeah, I feel like we've got a bunch of really strong community partners.
Oh,
and
good.
I'm really confident that, It's really hard to say right now about, I get asked often about these mysterious plans, like when might the food bank move?
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to say because of things like permitting and construction costs and just COVID and supply chains in general have made long-term planning or really near-term planning really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But without going on, too much more, I'm really confident about the long-term sustainability of the organization and the near-term ability to meet the demand and serve people in a really dignified way. So
I love that idea. And I really cottoned on to something you said about capitalism and, sometimes it's hard to survive in a capitalistic society if you're on the wrong side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to add another tidbit about Edna Lewis.
Yeah.
She and her husband were both communists.
Oh, really?
Yes.
There you go.
They were. They just believed in feeding the people. They wanted to feed the people.
Oh, that's
cool.
Great.
I know. So how many employees do you have now?
Oh, that's a great question. Right now we have 7.
Oh, wow.
Not including our seasonal picnics, summer meals program employees, of which there will probably be 2 this year.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yes.
So people know what's coming in the spring.
Yeah. Yeah. So picnics in the park. From 2014 to 2019 was the wonderful community oriented. It really, Leslie reminded me today that someone described it as it's like a birthday party in the park every day of the week.
Yeah.
We actually have had little kids. One anecdote one kid's grandma shared with us was that I said, "It's your birthday. Where do you want to go for lunch?" And he said, "Picnics in the park."
Mm-hmm.
And then at that time, we were only serving lunch to kids. So she brought him there and was like, "I thought I was going to get lunch too, but I can't I?" So of course we gave her a turkey sandwich or whatever. These days, or at least in COVID times, that program shifted to a just more of a pickup and to-go type thing, like every restaurant everywhere.
Right.
But we also adapted this delivery model where a school bus stops at 12 different stops on the island and gives out free lunch.
I saw one down at Tramp Harbor.
Yeah. That was us.
Okay.
And during COVID, we totally issued the, only kids thing and would just give lunches to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year, because of the way, vaccines are rolling out and we've had a lot of demand to, or, there's a lot of interest in getting back in the park because people really love that program. So I've got no fewer than maybe 4 meetings in the next 2 weeks to kind of map out how we're going to adapt it yet again to find that niche. I'm not certain that we need the bus again. Because the numbers of kids who would pick up at the high school or elsewhere was kind of higher. So we're kind of constantly adapting based on those external factors and just what we hear from the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm.
So,
keeping an ear to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was joking with someone the other day that I think our slogan for the picnics program this summer, even though we don't know what it's going to look like, is we're bringing summer back to Justin Timberlake's. We're bringing sexy back.
I love it.
I know. I don't mean to spoil the surprise, but if you see me and other staff members dancing to a music video and caught fruit and vegetable
costumes, wonderful. Yeah.
That's going to be it.
Well, we're just about out of time here.
Wow.
Time flies.
That went really fast.
What a great guest you are.
Thank you, Emily. Just thank you so much for coming.
You guys.
Love what you're doing up there. And most of all, I love the outcome of the food bank. And I love your passion for it. And I remember that when I first met you, it was like, my God, this woman is real. She's just got it. It's in her.
No, I thought the same thing when she was an intern. I went, oh.
Oh, hello.
She's, wow. She's like a hybrid person.
You know, if you asked me when I was young, if it was like, do you have a passion to be an administrator? I would have been like, ew, now I'm going to be an astronaut. But really, like, you never know where you're going to turn up. You know?
Yeah. Well, you've been listening for the last hour to Stirring the Pot on KVSH LP Vashon 101.9. Thank you for listening and for being there. And Emily, thank you for being here. Tom,
thank you, Tom.
I'll see you in a couple
me.
Weeks.
Yeah, this has been great.
Great fun.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.